Welcome to Tip of the Iceberg with Travis County Commissioner for Precinct 1, Jeffrey Trevelyan. I'm your host, Hopeton Hay, and this is our first podcast of the year. And we're going to talk to Commissioner Trevelyan about his agenda for 2023, which includes access to healthcare, job development, affordable housing, and a master plan environment, jail diversion, and substance abuse treatment. But let's start off with access to healthcare. And we're going to talk about the Central Health expansion and East Travis County. And according to an article that I found online, Commissioner Trevelyan, Central Health announced that they were transforming the historic Rosewood-Zaragoza Health Center into a new state-of-the-art specialty care clinic, which is slated to open soon to meet the medical access to serve the medical access program members. But to start off, Commissioner Trevelyan, what is the medical access program?
So we often refer to it as the MAP program, and that program is designed for uninsured people. We try to make sure that they have access to not only doctors for basic health needs, but also for specialty needs if you're dealing with diabetes or something like that. But also, when we talk about working with the uninsured populations, we're talking about a lot of people in our community who find themselves right at the federal poverty level, or sometimes 200% below the federal poverty level. The MAP program is really designed to make sure that poor people in the county have access to medical services. And it is a much larger population than one would think, particularly as we look at the number of home of unhoused people in our community who come from other places and don't have access to health care benefits here.
Can I get into a little philosophical look at this? Because I think a lot of people get their health care through their employer. So yes. If you work for a major corporation, you work for a government agency, then your health care is being provided through that employer. And you can often add your family also to that plan. So you're covered. Yes. But we have a health care system that appears at least to be built around the expectation that your employer is going to provide your health care. How important is it that Travis County Central Health continue to look at ways to make sure those who don't have the benefit of having an employer that provides good health care benefits, that those who don't, it's poor people, could be low to moderate income families. There are some people who are middle class income, but they don't have those type of health care benefits.
Well, it's a critical issue because, you know, when you think about who has insurance through their employer, well, if you are a government worker, oftentimes that comes with the benefit of insurance, even if it is just for you, many times that insurance is even free. But if you add a spouse or if you add children, then there is an amount that you have to pay every month, but it is not cost prohibitive. That also happens in corporations, things that we consider white collar jobs, but it often does not happen for hourly employees, for people who work on construction sites, for people who work at restaurants, for people who work at grocery stores. Oftentimes, if you are an hourly employee, you don't have access to all of the benefits that someone who works for a corporation or even the government might have. That's why it's very important to make sure that we are providing a space for the uninsured, because you've got a lot of people that come here for college and they don't have a full scholarship. They need to work. Those are guys without insurance. Or if you have someone who is changing jobs, or if you have someone who was working for a large corporation and their job goes away, there are many instances when a person might experience a change in employment and lose their insurance because of it. We try to make sure that they're covered.
So what is the role of Central Health, because they service both Travis County and the city of Austin? And how do you split those responsibilities between Travis County and the city of Austin to provide health care for the uninsured?
So when you look at Central Health, they are countywide. Basically, we set them up. Basically, the voters set them up to take care of indigent care and to provide a network of clinics so that people would have ready regional access, so that they're not looking at just one part of town, but they're looking at the less well-served parts of town. I think that's important. They have a taxing jurisdiction. So we have set up the basic financial infrastructure for them through a tax system, and that that system should provide for those uninsured people. And then even some insured people that are looking for specialty care to have ready access that is relatively close to where they live. So Central Health has a very important function, but its primary function is to make sure that we are addressing indigent care.
So let's shift to talk about job training opportunities. We have the Capital Area Workforce Solution that recently announced a plan to offer 1,000 free training scholarships for local workers. And the City of Austin and Travis County have partnered to provide the funding for Workforce Solutions to provide that training. On the surface, it appears that there are no issues because unemployment is so low. But in Travis County, there's some underemployment issues. And so I guess with this partnership, you're looking to help residents find higher paying jobs so that we have fewer people that are underemployed.
So we're looking to serve the hardest to serve community. And what I mean by that is you have to provide more than just job training. We want to make sure that we provide access to childcare, and we want to assist people in making sure that they have access to transportation, primarily public transportation. It is important to be able to provide job training. And what we want to do is try to provide that training as close to where people live as we possibly can. So you'll see some of the training being provided in high schools. You'll see some of the training provided at community colleges. You'll see some of the training provided at the Workforce Solutions facilities. But you'll also see some of that training provided on the work site as well. It's important to meet people where they are. And that's what we're trying to do through Workforce Solutions. There are a lot of jobs here, but there's still some communities, even though our overall unemployment rate is 3%, there's some communities that still suffer from 20% unemployment. So we're trying to make job training available for those people where they are. But then we are also trying to make sure that we're working with employers so that we understand what employees need to know when they get on site. And so it is a push and pull, talking to employers, talking to people who manage the places where we're trying to train people, and then reaching out into communities to let them know that we're not only trying to train them, we're trying to provide a safe space for their children, hopefully a learning environment for their children, so that when as they continue to grow, that they're able to get access to training as well.
One of the things I noticed many years ago when I worked for the Houston Area Urban League, back in the 1990s, is that the metrics for success in creating jobs was really biased toward getting people employed quickly. How do you ensure that there are resources available for those in our communities that need a long-term investment of training and assistance to be successful? Some people can get job training and go to work right away. Other people may need substantially more resources directed their way, and it may take them 6 months to get where they need to be fully employed. So how do you ensure that those who need the most help aren't being short shrifted?
So we talk about this in terms of career progression. We try to identify The types of, we try to look at all types of jobs, and we try to identify the level of experience and the level of training and certification that is necessary to get, for example, an entry-level job. But then we also talk about what is the next level of job? How do we train you for that? You know, the idea is to reach out to people who we consider underemployed. And one of the statistics that we are very proud of with Workforce Solutions is that a lot of people come in who are working, and let's say they make X. If they come through Workforce Solutions and stick with their training and get to the next level, the average worker who goes through that program ends up making X plus $30,000 a year. So we try to identify jobs where you can work your way up. We try to identify resources so that as you are going through training, we can help you with stipends so that you can stick to the training through the end. Because we know that if you're better trained and better certified, then you will ultimately make significantly more in your field. The idea is how we get you from entry level, not only to mid management, but to senior management. We want you to stay engaged during the course of your career, because what we know is, you know, people used to work at a company for 30 years and progress through a company. Now the average worker expects to have at least 6 or 7 job changes and maybe not stay at any given place more than 5 years. We want to make sure that they understand the market, they understand what's out there, and we train them to take advantage of that.
We've had a fair number of corporate expansions in Travis County. The ones that jump off the top of my head, Tesla and Samsung. And I do believe that there's some tax incentives that they get when they build new facilities, expand existing facilities in Travis County. How do you ensure that the jobs that they commit to create are made available not just to people coming from all over the country coming in for those positions, but also for people already living in Travis County, especially those living in Eastern Travis County?
Well, that's a great question. And I was a part of the negotiation team with Tesla. So we did 3 or 4 things with Tesla, for example, that speak to the question you just asked. Number one, we put together an economic development agreement. And what we did in that agreement was required specific things. The tax abatements that Tesla will get, it does not get up front. We have an agreement that has made several requirements, and it is only after we verify that the requirements have been met are they given a reimbursement of the taxes that they paid for the last fiscal year. So we set it up so that it is a reimbursement based on whether you have met the factors that we have put in place. One factor that we put in place is we want 50% of the people that are hired to be from Travis County. You can verify the number of employees, and you can verify where they came from as well. We asked that several of the jobs, of the first 5,000 jobs, 3,000 of them will be blue collar jobs, what we refer to as light manufacturing type jobs. We built a partnership with Workforce Solutions to specifically train people to be prepared for those jobs. So when you look at the significant number of jobs that do not require a college degree, that are manufacturing and blue collar oriented, we can specifically look at the number of jobs that were created, how those jobs have been classified, and whether the people that are participating with them are from local areas. And we also have encouraged relationships with the local school districts in the area so that we had an event at Tesla where a number of people had gone through a specific job training for Tesla. And as they were being entered into the company, they were being recognized as if they were signing football scholarships. They brought them in, gave them a hat, gave them their playbook, told them when their hours would be. It was creative and it was interesting, and it involved all the school districts from Del Valle, from Manor, from the Austin Independent School District, from Pflugerville, even Bastrop was included. So we want to make sure that our local tax dollars create local jobs, and we track that. And it is only after we verify that these things are done that we reimburse the taxes for the last fiscal year.
I believe also with Tesla, you also asked them to set goals for utilization of minority and women-owned businesses on the building of that facility.
We absolutely did. And we have watched as they have built a team of people who've come from TxDOT, who've come from the city of Austin, who've come from local governmental entities to run that program, so that they will have the value system of the government entities that have established those programs in Travis County.
So let's shift over to affordable housing. And I can recall I moved to Austin in 1992, worked at 2109 Rosewood Avenue. Okay. And
the DeWitty Center.
Absolutely. That's right. The Arthur B. DeWitty Center. And that area has become incredibly gentrified. And the cost of housing has gone through the roof in the city of Austin and Travis County. And so one of the biggest challenges that's faced in the Austin metropolitan area is providing affordable housing. Because of the cost of housing has gone up so much in those particular areas, we've seen a lot of the population, the Black community population, move further and further out to find housing that's affordable according to their income. So what is Travis County doing to make affordable housing for low to moderate income families?
So we are doing a number of specific things. We've got several tools that we have been using. First, we took some of the Recovery Act funding, over $100 million, and we have placed that into a fund which is designed to address the needs of our unhoused community. But I have recommended that we not only address the needs of our unhoused community, that we look at all of the housing stock that we own through our housing authority and through our housing corporation, to identify places where, for example, we might have bought a rundown property. Well, have we gotten that property up to code? Have we looked at the number of units that we have, and are all of those units available for use for some of our not only unhoused communities, but for some of our folks who are living in our housing authorities or in our Section 8 type communities? We want to make sure that we use the resources in a way that we can impact the greatest number of people. The other thing that we have done from the standpoint of affordable housing is we have invested in a number of multifamily facilities. So when I say multifamily, I mean things like apartments and townhomes. And we want to look at the whole continuum of housing. We have done a good job in multifamily settings. It is much more difficult to do that in single family housing because what this market allows you to charge someone for a single family house is in some instances obscene. The median price of a house in Travis County is over $600,000. And it is very difficult to talk the missing middle or to talk getting housing for a first-time home buyer if they're expected to pay over $300,000 to get that housing. So what we're doing is we're making sure that our multifamily program is sound. Where we're putting multifamily, we're also trying to identify those parts of the city that are growing from the standpoint of master planning. When you look at Colony Park, well, they just had a significant amount of investment put there by the city. Hopefully that investment will bring clinics, grocery stores, and all of the things that define what a stable community is. It is not just housing, but it's all those things around housing that make a community sustainable. And that's what we're working for.
So how does the Travis County, how do you work with the city of Austin? Because there's a lot of overlapping needs, overlapping challenges. How does the city and Travis County work together to address these critical issues?
So we have worked together. The Commissioner's Court has worked with the City Council where we put up $110 million of our Recovery Act dollars. They put up $106 million of theirs. We work together. We meet regularly. We monitor the activities of each housing authority. There's a Travis County Housing Authority. There's also a City of Austin Housing Authority. So we sit down and talk about where we are investing, and we look to see where there are opportunities to provide resources together that we weren't able to provide separately. We also work with developers and the private sector so that we are all looking to see what it is each of those entities can provide to make sure that we are serving the needs of an underserved community.
So let's talk about jail diversion and substance abuse treatment. We know that I believe the United States has more people in prison than China and Russia combined, that because of the issues with the war on drugs, a disproportionate number of African-Americans have been put into prison because of possession of drugs, despite the fact that African-Americans don't use drugs any more than anybody else. So how does the county address these issues that have criminalized could be, in some instances, a healthcare issue? If there is a addiction to drugs, that's a healthcare issue in my mind, not a criminal issue.
So the first thing that we are doing is that we make sure that we are investing in healthcare and in mental health assistance. We want to make sure that we are talking to community members. We want to make sure that we're working with school districts. Through Integral Care, we invested almost $3 million into addressing the mental health needs of youth, particularly as we have gone through a pandemic that has ravaged the community in many ways. It took away for a couple of years the ability of people and students to interact with each other for face to face. So we have tried to make sure that we are investing in school districts and creating opportunities for students to talk about things that are challenging them and to provide resources to address them. That is one reason that we have been pushing so hard for after-school programs from 3 o'clock to 7 o'clock every day in our Title I settings. Now, we have invested in some schools, but we have not reached our goal of comprehensively addressing Title I schools. We want to have a safe place for kids to be between the hours of 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock, where they can get assistance with their homework, get a third meal, and have enrichment as well. Meaning if I'm in the band, I have access to the band room if I want to practice. If I'm in theater or debate, I have access to the auditorium. If I play a sport, I have access to the gym. These are all things that we're trying to do. We've also worked with the district attorney's office on many instances where we're talking about a misdemeanor possession of marijuana or a controlled substance like that. Some of those, many of those issues will not be pursued in litigation by the district attorney's office or the county attorney's office. So what we've done is we've looked at some of those areas that are nonviolent. We've looked at some of those areas that are possession related, and the district attorney's office will not pursue legal action against those folks. But the other thing that we have to do is make sure that we're addressing the addiction needs of people that come into the system. What we do recognize is that it is a medical issue. What we also realize is that many people get their chemical addiction issues addressed only in the jail setting because we don't have beds that are out in the community, or we don't have enough beds that are out in the community where that issue can be addressed. What we want to do is, if we are diverting people, we want to divert them to some place, to an actual bed where they're getting resources. Judge Bennett had a program, a DWI program, where he put people into treatment. He put people into detox, and then gave them a counselor, then put them into a 12 steps program. We are trying to regenerate those programs, re-engineer those programs, but also add counseling and job training to those programs as well. We have been working to look at other places where these programs are successful. We've been trying to address best practices, but we've also been working directly with the Sobering Center, directly with Integral Care, directly with all those people who work in the mental health space to make sure that we are building on the system that we have with the things that are necessary and aren't available to Travis County yet.
Well, I can't let you go when we're talking about your plans for the year without talking about Capital Metro. You are the chair of the board of directors of Capital Metro. So what's on the horizon for Capital Metro?
There are a number of things that are significant that Cap Metro is involved in. The first vote that I took on the Cap Metro board was against Cap Remap because it took 12 routes that we felt were necessary routes out of precinct one. We have worked since FY18 to try to restore some of those routes and facilities. And I'm pleased to report that since 2018, we have had 18 projects in the Eastern Crescent that have spent over $26 million trying to restore some of the projects or routes that were taken away. We are in the process of placing a center at the Expo Center. We are going to have a park and ride there that's going to have a Metro Rapid bus that leaves every 15 minutes. Right now, the bus stops that go up the Loyola Road route, which is the 233 and the 237 goes to Community First. We are adding capacity that will leave every 15 minutes from the Expo Center, and we are studying Colony Park to make it a pickup zone. And what a pickup zone looks like is more like Uber than a bus route. You can call, and within 30 minutes, someone will pick you up at your house. And if you're going somewhere locally, they can take you to where you're going. If you're going somewhere that is outside the area, they will be able to take you to that Metro Rapid route, which leaves every 15 minutes. We have done something similar on Dessau Road. done something similar, doing something similar on Pleasant Valley, doing something similar in Dove Springs as well. We're trying to address the needs of the Eastern Crescent as we're planning for what comes next from an engineering and design standpoint at with Project Connect.
You've been listening to Tip of the Iceberg with Travis County Commissioner Jeffrey Trevelyan. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Always good to talk to you.